Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Today we have Sarah Rudy of Hello June. Sarah is a guitar player, songwriter, and her band Hello June performs
all over the place.
All over.
If you are listening to this episode on Spotify or any other platform, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel at Rusik Podcast. Over there, you can check out live performances from all of our guests, including the guest you are listening to right now, Hello June. Some great songs over there. Check it out. Subscribe. Give us a follow. Make sure that notification bell is clicked on. All that good stuff. Enjoy. There's something about that I think is really interesting and appealing in a way.
Yeah.
I like, in a strange way, I'd like the idea of sort of writing under a pen name.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Like, does it feel like almost you have more creative liberty in a way?
So that's a good question. I'm one of those people, I guess, that like grew up under like the you kind of speak when you're spoken to kind of. And, yeah. So, you know, with that comes like a sense of like, okay, I'm just going to shut up until someone asks me to speak. And I think that.
Oh, jump in here whenever you want. You know, you can talk over us. We'll talk forever. So just like.
Well, I think that the name Hello June, like I was absolutely dead set on not using my name. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that was just me being like, I'm trying to make as, I want the least amount of direct eyes on me as possible. Like seeing my name used to freak me out. Like,
interesting.
It's like, oh God, no, don't worry about coming. You know, it's like, like, you know, it's like the opposite of what you want to, please come to my show. But you know, music, working in the music business has obviously, it's gotten me over a lot of things. And I came out of the womb very shy, very introverted. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, when I say that to people, they're like, really? And I'm like, but I mean, I did. And so I think for me, I'm like, I have to name this something else so mm-hmm. that it can be about me and the rest of these people that are in my band. And, you know, so I've gotten to a point where I don't care. My name is thrown around and it's okay. I'm fine with people, you know, associating me with things.
Well, that's a nice balance then. It seems like you kind of got to a good place.
Yeah, I think so.
That's good. I do like that idea though. There's something about that for me too. I wouldn't say that I share the shyness part of it, although that could be there too. But to me, I just like, it's more of like an ego thing. Hmm. I like when one's ego can be removed from the equation.
Yeah,
like there's something about, it sounds stupid, but there's something almost about the purity of it in the sense that you're doing it for the service of the thing.
Hmm, yeah.
And it's like you are intentionally removing ego as much as possible, which I think is an interesting slant to come at it from.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
But again, some people like getting their name in the bright neon lights. And, you know, as of right now, I release music under my own name. That's me too. So, so you played last night at the Basement.
Yeah.
I heard what you were talking when you were playing Highways earlier. I heard that you had some exciting stuff happen last night. Give us the run. I want to hear what fucking, how that went down. Cause that's amazing. That's so beautiful. Like that's such an awesome thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, so we played at the Basement. Lucinda Williams was in the audience. She showed up for us, and
that's got to feel just beautiful. That's got to be so.
Oh, it was beautiful. Yeah. Like I'm, you know, looking out there and seeing someone that you look up to so much. I've been around her and met her a few times now. I think and so I've gotten over that. Like when I first met her, I was really awkward and
shock and awe, you know.
Yeah, I know. I did the same thing when I met Yellow Tango the other.
Oh,
I
wow.
met them like a month ago, and I was the same. I like looked at my shoes. I'm like, oh God, here we go.
You're like, you're like 9 years old again. You're
it's ridiculous. But I mean, with Lucinda, it's different. Cause it's like, I mean, this is. I mean, she's a living legend. She's like, she's a woman who has dealt with a lot of the stuff that like I'm dealing with currently, and. Like, she's just been so kind to me and very supportive, and my stomach's growling. You're welcome. But, you know, she's such a real an authentic person. But, you know, so she's in the audience watching, and, you know, I'm trying not to freak out about that, you know, because, yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, I mean, she's a legend. She's a badass. She's, you know, she's, I mean, I don't know that I look up to anyone any more than I do her. So, you know, but I got to hear her new record last night that's coming out.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
That's like fantastic.
So that was, I mean, that was such an honor. Like we had, like they had some people over and, but I played my song Highways for her because she wanted to hear the lyrics a little bit better than she could in the mm-hmm. the basement. And she like sang on the chorus, and I was like, this is probably one of the greatest moments awesome.
So beautiful.
It was a beautiful moment.
That's, I mean, that's going to be with you forever. That's incredible.
Yeah, I know. I feel really grateful for moments like that. Yeah.
It's such a, I think that we all get so, we do this for the right reasons, I think, in my heart, but we like anything that you obsess over and that you want to pour that much time and energy into, not to say that people get jaded with it, but it becomes routine in a way. It becomes just a part of life. It's what you do. And I think moments like that can remind you in a strange way, like, oh no, like I fucking love doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because you're working so hard. This business is so hard. And I don't know that people like really grasp like how ridiculous this business is. Like you're doing, I mean, if you're doing it, you're doing every single piece of it. Like I do every single promo thing. I do every single graphic that you see. I do every post. I do every, you know, I mean, it's just all the communications for booking. I do my own booking. I literally do every single piece of everything. And if you do it to a point where, you know, you're doing it quite frequently, and I mean, it's a lot. Yeah. So, it's a lot. And then you get run down and you get like, you know, like, man, like, what am I doing this for? Yeah. You know, but, you know, moments like that, they're so real. And, you know, I've also been grateful to just have those sprinkled in where I'm like, okay, that's, I mean, you know, you're face to face with very real and, you know, amazing songwriters, or you're, you know, you get to be amongst a community. Like I'm really grateful for just the community that I have back in West Virginia. Like it's, you know, I feel like I know some of the most talented people. So yeah, those moments kind of fill your cup, yeah, as they say.
And I think there's this sort of fallacy involved as well, where people think, okay, well, yeah, I'm going to grind it out, but then once I reach escape velocity, then I have other people to do shit for me. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, no, you're only going to have other people because there's way, way, way too much shit to do, mm-hmm, that you can't possibly do. So you're going to have even more shit to do. And now this other person's going to do the shit that you just can't manage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and so it's
sure,
like, it's one of those interesting dynamics where, I, at least from talking to people of, you know, various, I don't even want to call it success, but just various points in career, it's always just, you know, nose to the grindstone,
yeah,
work. And I think you just sort of have to accept it and be like happy with it, but it's so hard. I mean, again, that's one of the reasons why I've loved doing this show is
you get a lot of data.
Yeah. And like, and you yeah, get to like, sure, and you get to realize too, at least for myself, again, as someone like, I love writing songs. I yeah, love performing. And everyone's been in that situation where you just feel like there's no fucking way this is going to, like, how is it this hard? Talking to all these people who feel the exact same way, where, yeah, again, wherever you kind of fall, right, in that timeline of things, it does reassure you in a way. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, okay, cool. No, never mind. I got this.
Yeah.
And there's something sort of beautiful about that and reassuring. There's something about that I think makes you just feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Because it can feel so isolating.
For
it,
sure.
It can feel like you are just, it does feel like it's like you against the world, which it mm-hmm isn't, but it, yeah, I think because it is, especially in 2025, I mean,
it feels like that sometimes.
Because,
yeah,
you know, you have the ability to do all this stuff mm-hmm on your own. I
yeah
mean, which is beautiful. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, the fact, oh, yeah, that you can do all your own booking to the degree in which you do it. I mean, that's such a beautiful, yeah, incredible thing that you can do that, you know, however long ago, it would have been a lot harder to be able to accomplish that on your own. But it does come with, like anything, it comes with trade-offs, you know, it's pros and cons.
Do you find that difficult to, like, balance that sort of business and promotional side of music with the creative? And
definitely. My biggest problem is always, like, just the amount of time that I have for things. Because I also own my own business. I started, like, about 2 years ago, I started my own business doing, like, graphics and branding.
Oh, nice. Fantastic.
And honestly, like, with Hello June, like, with the network that I've created, like, I haven't really had to ask for work. Mm-hmm. So I feel really grateful for that. Like, I'm in these communities that just people just come to me and are like, hey.
That's fantastic.
And I know. And I'm really super grateful for that. But it also is really hard. I mean, I'm managing my time all the time. But I can be really flexible with my time at the same time. So it's good, and there are some trade-offs, you know, but a lot of times I'm like, man, I really wish I could just like carve out time to write. And I do, but
it always comes with the cost of something else too. And also too, I mean, like, so you said you started that a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. That's around the time you put out the last record, right?
Yeah,
I mean, to think of how much time goes into making a record, and to be like, okay, I'm going to start this other thing on top of that.
Oh, I mean, like, it's a lot.
It's like
businesses at once. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody.
For your own mental well being, probably not the best move. But no, I mean, but that's fucking badass that you can juggle that, because
it's a juggle. Yeah,
and again, like, for people who are listening who aren't as familiar with the world.
Yeah.
You know, that world of music. I mean, that's a fucking feat to do that. I mean, even just putting out an album on its own.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Oh, it's a lot.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
It's cool. I enjoy it. And I help other people that are musicians with putting their records out in terms of the branding and the content that they're putting out. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. I'm working with this band right now from West Virginia called Blue Twisted Steel. They're, you guys would love, I think, their record is so good. Nice. They worked
I'll look that up.
Nice. Yeah, it's they're going to drop it early next year. Okay. So but the guy who produced it he's like worked in the Tyler Childers realm. So there's, he has a band called Wayne Graham. The work that he does in production engineering is just beautiful.
That's one of the coolest things about having the show, honestly, is we get people tell us cool bands and artists to listen to.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
That's one of the perks. It's like, nice. I get to find all this cool music. Because I also find, and maybe this is just me. So my way that I listen to music is through Spotify primarily. Mm-hmm. And I do find, as much as I love having, you know, like all of mankind's recorded music and like the fingertips, which is insane, I do find that it sort of funnels you into this sort of endless circle of the same shit over and over and over again. Like, I'll listen, like, I feel like my Spotify
is... the algorithm feeds you more of what they think you want, right?
And it's just like, perpetually,
I don't know what I want.
Yeah, exactly.
Suggest me some random shit, you know, that's really what I'm looking for.
And I feel like my algorithm is just the same, like, the last 3 months of everything I've been listening to, just... over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, they tend
to
do
that.
And
then like a little tweak, and then 3 months later, it's like, you know, the same. So that is kind of nice, because I do think that that's kind of like a fear in a way. I think overall, all this stuff is fantastic for music, and like anything, there are, you know, there's pros and cons, but I think on the whole, it's fucking great. That being said, that is one sort of fear that I have, is you do get. You do get kind of pigeonholed in a way, and there are these sort of rooms you enter, and it's really hard to get out of.
Yeah.
Just as a consumer,
right.
It can be kind of difficult. And I don't. That's not even really by design. I think it's just because it's the way that, you know, we interface with these things like algorithms, etc. That you do naturally find yourself in that predicament. But it's so nice to have. For us, a sort of way out of that, whereas I think for a lot of people who just, you know, want to throw on music on the way to their, you know, on their daily commute or whatever, you get kind of stuck in it. It's hard. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it's good to avoid the algorithm sometimes.
Like,
find music in different ways. Word of mouth or like I do like specific musicians a lot. So I'll hear a band, I'm like, wow, this guitar player is killer. And then I look up that guitar player, I'm like, oh, he played in this band.
Yeah.
And then maybe I love that drummer. And then I look up him and he played in another band. So I find a lot of music that way.
Me too. They're networks. Yeah. Like if you're really digging a band, like I know, like I've been super into MJ Lenderman lately.
Oh,
and
okay.
His networks, like I've been kind of weaving that
That's
together
cool.
And I'm like, oh, there's some good players here.
Yeah, totally.
You know, some good stuff going on.
I think, yeah.
If you get too stuck in the algorithm, you just end up listening to the same shit over and over.
And it's this weird thing too. It's a cultural thing too, as much as it is, you know, us interfacing with technology. I mean, not to be all, I feel like this is so doom and gloom right now. I don't mean this way,
but it's like, I mean, I don't know. But a lot of things are doomed right now.
But like, I feel like, again, like as someone who's around kids constantly with my job, it's really interesting because, like for them too, I think it's so strange that, you know, they're living in a time where, you know, you've got a bunch of 12-year-olds in a room, and they could listen to any music that they fucking want to.
Right.
And for whatever reason, they're all listening to the exact same fucking
thing.
Oh,
wow.
And
really?
It's very strange.
Wow.
That, like, and again, like, that's in a lot of ways, that's the way it's always been. So there's nothing new there, I guess. But in my mind, I just think about the fact that it's all so accessible right now. Like, I can't imagine, and I'm sure just by nature of who we are, right? Mm-hmm. The people who do this thing, we're a little idiosyncratic. We're a little odd. Like we're probably the kids who weren't listening to the same thing that all of our peers were, or most of our peers were. But, it's odd. I find that like you have all this access to music in a way that, like, you know, I never had, let alone my parents or my grandparents. Like it's getting so much easier to find that thing that you love, and yet for the most part, on the whole, they all just want to listen to the same, like, you know, whatever it is.
Well,
it's like so strange. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because like usually it's like, I mean, people who've come up in earlier generations, it's like, where you get your music from? Well, it's limited.
Access. Yeah, it's just
access. It's limited to what your parents were listening to, you know, what your grandparents fed you and fed the, you know, it's, so it's like, it's just very, it's going to be different. Like my experience is going to be different than my neighbors in that way, you know, like it just sort of depends. Like my parents were like into Neil Young and Billy Joel and, you know, so I'm getting, you know, Neil Young is very nostalgic for me. So is Billy Joel. And it's like, some people are like, Billy Joel, like, you know, I'm like, no, Billy Joel's a great songwriter. Because I know, I've listened to a lot of his records, a lot.
I do love that sort of, that nostalgia trip you can get from music. Oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
It's so great. It's like, I love listening. Like when I can't listen to Sam Cooke and not think of my dad, like that kind of thing. Or I can't listen to Johnny Cash and not think about my dad. Cause it's just, and it's also nice, I think too, when you realize that your parents' taste in music was pretty fire. That helps too. You know, if we were listening to, like, you know, God knows what, then maybe I'd feel differently. But you know, that probably feeds into it a little bit.
You know, my mom was like a super big Celine Dion fan.
Really?
Oh my God, loved her. I mean, it's funny because there's some things, like, you know, she got me into like Sheryl Crow, and, you know, I dug hard into that, Neil Young, and then the Celine Dion. I was like, okay, I've gotta, you know, we're diverting here, but like, man, I watched her documentary recently, and holy shit, she's so strong and amazing. Have you guys seen that?
I have not. I need to add this onto the rotation.
Man,
damn.
She's had such like health issues that she's gotten over, like, I mean, stuff where I would just be like, man, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm
you know,
out.
And
yeah.
And like, man, she's like, I mean, I just mad respect. I was like, okay,
that's fantastic.
You know,
I need to check this out.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what it was called, but I mean, things
have
were.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. It's good.
Oh, she saw it.
Oh, damn.
It's,
okay.
It's too. I mean, I was crying. I'm crying hard. You know, like, but I mean, like, she's, oh man, like, it's just, it's an inspiration. You know, that kind of
that's
thing.
That's killer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing I've been telling people recently. I, you know, my music in my household took kind of a shift in like the early 2000s. My parents started listening to more like, you know, late 90s, early 2000s country. And that way I couldn't get in. I hated that for years. I hated that. And then recently, like honestly, probably in the last like 6 months, I started going back and listening to some of it and thinking, okay, some of this is kind of fire. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of it's bullshit, but some of this is kind of fucking fire, honestly.
Well, some songwriting. I mean, good songwriting they can really ruin good songwriting with bad production.
No, that's what I found. I think more than anything is I thought, I don't know, some of these songs are actually pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Just maybe not presented, and that's another thing that's really kind of cool about music too is the idea of presentation versus content in a way.
Yeah.
That you can take. You can really polish a turd and make something out of it.
polish a turd to a degree,
you know, you know what I mean. And but the inverse is also true. Like you can take something that is really solid and is a great piece of music, and absolutely butcher it in presentation.
And
I'm sort of obsessed with in a way. Like when I listen to, and I find that dichotomy between those two things most present in country music for whatever reason, especially contemporary country music. Whereas it's this weird thing. I'll listen to music, and I wonder if you do this too. As a songwriter, I'll listen to music and I'll go through that calculus in my head, and I'll think, okay, do I like this because it's a good song and it's being presented poorly, or the inverse?
Yeah.
And sometimes both. Sometimes it's a great song that's presented incredibly well, or sometimes it's a crappy song that, you know, they're just throwing shit on top of, you know, like,
right.
But that I'm constantly doing that calculation in my mind of what's going on here. And I wonder if other songwriters do that too, because I've never really talked to anyone about that. But
I definitely think about that. Like the 90s or maybe even the 80s, you know, I feel like there's a lot of, each era it's like, you know, things are being introduced, like new guitar pedals that probably they haven't really stuck around for reasons, or like, you know, new recording equipment that, you know, have phased out. And so people are like leaning into these new things for every era.
I think the 80s like ruined a lot of music, in my opinion. Like even some of my favorite bands, like their 80s era, I just can't listen to it. And there's a lot of good stuff in there, but
Brian,
just the production style.
Gated
snares and super wet digital reverb. And like everything kind of has that same 80s sound to it. And I just fucking hate the sound.
No, I know what you mean. In some ways, I love like the 80s, like chorus, I do too
if it's like so over the top that it's kind of like cheesy and poking fun at itself, but like I can't take it seriously, so it has to be like music.
The thing is, it infected every, like there's no other era of music, it, you know, at least in the last century, I don't think that really comes to mind. There's no other decade where the sound was so prevalent over all genres of music.
I mean
everything from jazz to pop to, you know, country music to, you know, anything you can think of. It went through this 80s filter in a way that like that other eras, and I think a big part of that was obviously just in a lot of ways the dawn of the digital era. It was just such a new approach. It wasn't like, okay, here are a couple new tools. It's like, no, we pulled in a whole like truck of shit that you can use now. You know, like here's a truckload of new toys. So I think that's a big part of it. But there's no other era in recent memory where that sound infected everything.
Distinct.
And it's also a very distinct sound too.
You get anything recorded in the 80s, you can hear within 5 seconds. What era it comes from. You know?
And some people, some people did it tastefully, I think. Some people dealt with it in interesting taste ways, but for the most part, it was just so potent that I think it overtook everything.
Right.
I probably look at this a little differently than Brian. I actually have a lot of respect for songwriters, bands, performers, et cetera, that took it on and tried to utilize it in some way.
Yeah.
And there are some people out there who just wholly rejected it and said, I'm just sticking with my, and that's, I respect that in its own way too. But there is something I think is interesting about, creative people saying, hey, let me get a crack at this and see. Yeah. And a lot of people, they utilized it for a little bit and then sort of phased it out to a certain degree. Some people, that was kind of their whole shtick. But I don't know. I do kind of respect that in a way. I do sort of think it's interesting when artists can say, okay, here's a new color. Let me see what I can do with it.
And, well, like The Cure, you know, I mean, their records from really any time period, I'm like, I'm in, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people, if they made a record in the 80s, I'm like, I mean, that's going to be the worst one.
A lot of it didn't age well.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's fair. And you know what? And it got worse, too. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say all of my, thinking on it now, because I've never really done this mental exercise before, most of my favorite 80s records are the early half of the 80s. By the time you get to like 86, dude, it's bad. It's bad. Because I think coming into it, I can think of some phenomenal records, 80 to 85, that are great, where people, you know, lean into the sound a little bit, but it was still tasteful to a degree. Once you get to the latter half of the 80s, it is hard to find records.
I think the public in general just got sick of that, and that's why the whole grunge movement became so
this
big.
This is why Guns N' Roses is big.
Yeah, but people were just like, oh, the sound that's the complete opposite of that, get rid of this.
I'm kind of curious about this for you. I never got into grunge music.
Oh, I was into it.
You were into it?
Oh, hell yeah.
I was a huge punk kid. I loved punk rock. Mm-hmm. And like, that was my sort of gateway drug into music. But I could never, like, I had a lot of friends in like high school, and I played in bands with kids who loved that kind of stuff. But to me, like, that sound never clicked for me. And even today I listen to it and I can like kind of enjoy it and respect it for what it is. But like, it's not, I don't know, like sonically, it just was never my thing.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but I think I was, you know, like I was hearing things that I was really not liking that was coming out at the time. And then, you know, I found my cousin gave me like his stack of CDs. And so, you know, I went home with probably 15 CDs from like the 90s, and I can't remember I know like there was a Bush CD, I know there was Nirvana, like I just fell in love with like the grit of, you know, Eddie Vedder and his presentation with Pearl Jam and like
I can get down with Pearl Jam, actually, I say that, but now that I think about it, there are some bands that I do really like.
Stone Temple Pilots too, they were really good.
They've got some good stuff.
I love the Smashing Pumpkins. Got into that point, like there's you know, like I feel like there was just something captured.
I take back everything I just said. No, I definitely got into some of that shit.
Yeah, there was some great stuff in that era.
Yeah,
it did also kind of like the 80s. Like eventually, that sound kind of got tired and.
Well, people like try to recreate, and it's like you sort of get with every attempt. I mean,
yeah, it gets like further away from whatever that thing is.
Yeah, because I mean, like, you know, you're Kurt Cobain and Eddie Vedder weren't thinking like, you know, let me try to be like someone else. They were like, you know, and so you've got this really authentic thing that happened. And
I think that eventually happens with like all genres of music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel for yourself? How do you balance that? How do you balance that feeling of, I'm trying to think of quite the way to say this, but that expectation of presentation, genre, etc., with what you feel to be true to your creative voice? Like, does it even enter the equation, or are you very mindful of it? How do you go about dealing with that?
I try not to think about it because, you know, I don't come to this as a trained musician. You know, I was actually afraid to sing into a microphone until someone like forced me one day. And I'm grateful, you know, for that, because I was legitimately too shy to even just sing into a mic. But, you know, for me, like, if I'm, you know, again, my grandfather taught me to play guitar, and then I taught myself everything else after that. I know a lot of people who have had a lot of playing experience with, you know, their friends. Like, I think being a woman, I've talked to a few women that have this similar experience. I feel like being a woman, the boys are not, they either really want you in their crew, or they're like, you're out, you know? And I feel like it's like a tough thing growing up to kind of, you know, in high school, I remember there were groups of boys playing, and I was like, oh, I'd really like to, you know, I'd really like to play. And it was sort of like, nah, you know. So, but, you know, so you have like everybody has like kind of a different history or whatever. But I'm not coming to it from a schooled place. I'm not coming to it from a place where I've had a bunch of different experiences, you know. And I think that for me, I've just kind of told myself, like, don't think about, you know, don't try to, just don't focus on, because I feel different, you know, and I feel like I'm always being like, I don't know, I've tried to embrace that as opposed to really focus on it negatively, I think, because if I'm trying to do a certain thing, I'll probably fail at it.
That's probably a very smart way to approach it, yeah.
I think it's probably just the only thing that, you know, again, from a limit, if I had all, you know, your skill with jazz and stuff like that, I think that I would probably try to shape that and be something that I'm not. And, you know, I just have to be whatever comes out.
That's the way to do it, yeah.
And I also find, again, as a consumer, all of my favorite artists in whatever world they're working in have that in common. They're all very idiosyncratic, and they're all very distinct. And they might be difficult to box into a particular genre or style. And those that I love the most covered a great many styles and genres and approaches of music or whatever it might be. But it's this sort of constant pursuit of the thing that is the element that I think I latch onto the most and respect the most in artists. Like,
it feels I had a manager I was working with, that was really into the Americana scene. And so, you know, he was really introducing me to a lot of that sort of scene and network. And so I played Americana Fest a few times, and I never classified Hello June as Americana. And I mean, I feel that just didn't really click with me. Although, you know, they've welcomed us into that circle in a lot of ways. But I feel like I'll never forget being, I was like, man, I'm having like so much anxiety because I'm watching these different acts before me at Americana Fest. And I'm like, this wasn't an official showcase. It was just like, you know, I mean, there's a bunch of unofficial stuff that goes on.
We've all done that.
Which they're cooler, you know what I mean? That's usually cooler. But I'm watching this, all of these like really good Americana artists, and I'm like, basically like, oh my God, we're going to get up there. And you know, it's.
It also starts to sound the same too.
It does. Yeah.
Which again, like I there's some of that stuff I really like, but like.
No, so
that,
yeah. Yeah. No, I think everybody's kind of aiming at a thing. And, but I, you know, I'm like having this like semi panic attack, and I'm like, so I get up there, we do our thing, and I'm like, well, that sucked, because it was like an outdoor hot thing, and I'm sure it sounded terrible. And, No Depression wrote that we were the Velvet Underground of Americana Fest, and I was like, all right, that's fine, I'm good with that.
That's a win right there. No, that's so beautiful though. Like, and I think, like, to me, those are often the gigs that stick with me the most. Really, truly, I think, and those are the ones that,
well, it taught me to just chill, like, just do it. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? Because I thought they were going to be like, get out of here, you're never coming back.
But there is something to, don't get me wrong, I think if you're working if your goal is to work in a particular style, genre, scene, etc., that can be worthy in its own right. living in Nashville, we obviously have a lot of people on here who work in that country mm-hmm. world.
Yeah.
And that's great. And as someone who loves particular moments of country music and particular styles of country music, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
To myself, as a creative person, I don't really have interest in that. I don't have interest in serving a particular style.
Mm-hmm.
I only want to serve the creative voice in my head.
Yeah.
Whatever, and that might borrow heavily from particular styles of music, mm-hmm. and that will shift and change over time, I think, like anything does. But like all of the people that I love in music, and again, in any art form, if they can stay true to that, I think there's something there that I'm just drawn to. And I think as consumers, that's what most of us, like, people want authenticity. Mm-hmm. They want someone. I think, I'm sure that that's the reason why you're doing incredibly well, is because people watch you perform and they recognize, okay, this is someone who's trying their best to present the thing that mm-hmm. is in, you know, that they're creatively fishing for. Like last night, I went to this local theater in Nashville's been doing a month long run of Akira Kurosawa films, which I'm a huge movie nerd, and he's one of my he's the goat. If anyone wants to know who's the greatest of all time, Kurosawa's great. But last night they played Ran, and I got fucking high as balls, and I went to go see. I've been like living in that theater for like the last like week at this point, and I got fucking high as balls, and I sat there, and oh, like, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen this movie, but I had never seen it in a theater before, obviously, and it was like a religious experience. I mean, there's something just watching somebody who is that. This was one of his last films. I mean, for him, this was his sort of, he would call it his greatest work. Mm-hmm. I would probably say the same. And to watch somebody that competent in what they do at that skill level of what they do present something with that sense of clarity and integrity and just passion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it, like, to me, that's the best part of being alive.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that's the most amazing thing in the world. I mean, like, the guy's wife dies of, you know, 40 years or whatever, 39 years, dies over the course of making this movie. They shut down production for one day, and he's like, fuck it, we're going back to work. We're making this fucking, like, and like, and just
dedication,
that dedication of like, no, like, I've, you know, he sort of famously started to go blind at the end of his life, and he couldn't, he was afraid he wasn't going to be able to actually see when they got to shooting this movie. So he painted, it's like a 3-hour movie. He painted every shot of this movie.
Wow.
And then was like, and then had his DP, you know, had his DP frame for him while they were actually shooting, because his eyesight was so bad.
Oh my God.
But like, to have that level of commitment to something, and to see that on screen, or to hear that, or what, like,
I feel like even
if you don't know those things, I think those things transcend, they come through.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you'll sit in that theater, and it will affect you. And it's the same thing. Like, if you go to see a band, you don't need to know that the bus ride to get there that day, you know, the bus broke down and they had to, like, you don't need to know all that shit, but they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are presenting something with that level of passion and mm-hmm. integrity, like, that, you will get that. You will really get that.
100%.
And I just think that to me is the thing in art, again, regardless of the medium, that is so powerful. And I wish, like, I just wish on all of my fellow man that you can, that you get to experience that as much mm-hmm. as possible. Cause I just think it's the best part of being alive. I mean, other than the people that you get to meet. I mean, again, that's one of the reasons why this has been so fucking cool, is like, we just get to meet cool people.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure. But
I just love that. I just love the stuff people, I love how obsessive people get
mm-hmm.
about making things that they're passionate about.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. I mean, there's nothing like it in the world, but
yeah. I mean, the people that I meet that are like the best, at things, I feel like there's like some obsessive qualities, you know?
Yeah. For crazy. Sure. Probably the word's probably a little crazy.
I think like, you need that sort of obsessive craziness to get to a certain level.
Right.
It's, almost,
you also have to have that letting go thing because it is like a piece of art needs to be let go. Like, it's, once we create it, it's everybody else's, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that aspect of it And if you're too obsessive and you can't let go, then that's like a,
that's why I love music, I think, is I love the, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, but the music that I love, regardless of genre or how you want to kind of catalog it, it is that approach of just being in the moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously jazz is far and away the greatest representation of this in American music. I mean, I think I personally don't call jazz a genre of music. I think it's more, it's an approach to interplay. It's an approach to musicianship. But God damn, that's the best feeling in the world. When you're doing that with other people, when you're on stage and you can have that sort of creative interplay with people. Yeah. Oh, it's the best. I mean, there's nothing like it. It's fun.
That's what it's all about right there.
So you did, I don't even know where I was going with that fucking tangent. Goddamn. So you did the last record a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Where are you in this sort of process of the next one? Are you still writing? Are you, where is all of that? How's that coming out right now?
I have songs.
I love it.
I have songs. I probably have enough songs, but conceptually, like, I think I want to come up with more because I don't feel like the album is done necessarily. I think probably one more round of, I'll usually write songs in like, I've found that I write them in like twos or threes. Like I'll write one and then another one will come, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like probably another couple rounds of that. And I'll have enough that makes sense conceptually to me and sort of rounds things out.
When you're writing, do you think about them in relationship to the album? So like one of the things that I find when I'm writing, and I try to not do this, but just subconsciously it inevitably comes into the equation. If, you know, it's been a while since I've done three records, three full lengths, and the last one was 2020. So it's been a hot minute. And so, you know, it's been 5 years worth of writing. One of the things that I think about when I am writing and I try to kind of push back is, okay, well, I've got, you know, do I need a song like this for the record, or do I need a song like this, right? You almost start, or you can, if you're not careful, you can start sort of writing to fill roles. Mm-hmm. Do you find that you do that to like, because I love the cohesion of a good album. Like, don't get me wrong, writing individual songs, I could do that for the rest of my life and be happy. Mm-hmm. But I love an album as an album, that sort of presentation. Here's 10, 14 songs, whatever, that are a sort of cohesive artistic statement, for lack of a better phrase. And so for me, I do find that I try to mold in that regard because I want the album to be something I'm proud of. Do you feel when you're writing, you're trying to write to serve roles in that way? Or is it just, let me deal with this thing in the moment and then move on to whatever the next one happens to be?
Well, I think with each record, it's kind of been a little bit different. Like the first EP that I put out into the world, Spruce, those were the absolute first songs I ever wrote. Like the first song on that is called Time. That is the first song that I ever wrote. Like that you're listening to, the first song I ever wrote. And Dance, the second song on that record, is the second song I ever wrote. I feel, you know, like, so to be honest with you, I'm just like learning with this each time. I think the last record, Artifacts, that I put out was, it was a little more of like what you're saying, like, you know, we kind of, this would be really great to have like a kind of a, you know, a banger here. Let's try a banger.
Let's put a faster one here. Yeah. Like, we need a slow,
But I, to be honest with you, I feel at this point, like, again, because this is all just a learning experience, I'm just taking things in. And going, yeah, I want to tweak that a little bit. And I think at this point I just want to write and see, like right now, I actually think I have two records. Like I think I have one that is more of like what we're doing live is, and then I have one that's more, I think it should be more intimate, you know, and there's just some songs that I want them to be more stripped down. I want them to feel like you're in the same room when I'm singing. And I wonder if those will end up together. Yeah. It's possible. Like I am a team player. I tried to you know, take other people's thoughts in. So it depends on kind of who we're working with and their thoughts. Mm-hmm. But I would absolutely be open to just separating those out, you know, because what I want is a body of work, you know, not that the world cares about that because the world just wants to hear one single at a time on the algorithm. But no, I'm just kidding. I actually do praise my fans for that because I feel like my fans, you know, like I use the thought, like, you know, back in the day I would take these take records or CDs and I would just like dissect every single thing. And I feel like a lot of my fans are those people. Like those,
that's cool. That's, you know, that's so gotta feel nice.
It does feel nice. And I think that like, I don't know why I'm attracting that kind of person, you know, but I love it. Like I'm glad that that I do feel that. So, you know, for me, like to put together a cohesive album, like you're saying, like that is important to me. And it's also, I think, important to my fans. So, I don't know. I guess we'll just see, like, see how it goes.
That's
like,
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that people kind of find, people find what they're looking for in a way. I think if you're the kind of person like myself or like you, who as a listener want to listen and to dissect music in that way, I think the people who also similarly want to do that, we'll kind of find you.
Like attracts like.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that there's something to that. Cause, and also, like, we get, I think we live in a time now too where, because there's such an ability for people to access anything, that so many people, the desire can often be to appeal to as large an audience as possible and to get, you know, whatever that lump sum total number is at the end of the day, up to the highest it can possibly be.
Yeah.
And in my mind, at least, and this is probably why I'm not very successful, I don't really see the point in that. It's like, no, like I would rather find the people for whom are looking for the thing I'm doing.
Yeah.
And they will, you know, I have no control over whether or not they're going to like the thing, but they're going to have a better chance. My batting average will be better with them than if I'm just shooting for the greatest lump sum total.
Those are the people, you know, I'm looking for. Like that, if I probably had to sum up like one goal of mine, it's for the business side of music, you know, like how do I make this sustainable? Of course I want the most people to hear it as possible, but to be honest with you, like I'm really just looking for like my people.
Which I think that's probably the way to do it. I mean, because
I don't care about the guy who's listening to, like, you know, he's still on like pop radio. You know, I don't care about.
Yeah,
I don't care about person's capturing.
Not, it sounds. It also sounds silly, but when you actually kind of break it down on a nuts and bolts level, it's like that person isn't going to buy a ticket to the show. They're not going to buy a T-shirt. They're not. You know, like.
Even if they are, they're not going to understand.
Yeah. So it's like almost like, how much does that even serve you? One, how much does it serve you sort of on the business side of things monetarily, but also how much does it serve you as a on the creative side of things? It's like, it's not really even in, it might be a number on Spotify that looks good, but it's not really
that's
serving.
That's like short term. I think the more you can stay true to yourself, the more you will eventually find people will be like,
and I think
long term supporting you, like you'll attract the right kind of people.
Right.
And even something like this show, we're starting to find that where it's like, we're kind of getting to a point of realization where it's like, okay, shit, like, I wish these numbers were higher on this video. Yeah. And then I think one of the things that we kind of keep checking back in is, okay, it seems like the people, you know, the people that who are subscribed or who do want this content, they're engaging with it. Like they actually really like it. So it's like, okay, you kind of, you found that thing. You just need to grow that thing.
Yeah.
Like you don't need, it doesn't, in a weird way, like it almost does you not, it almost does you a disservice if it's just like, okay, here's a shit ton of people who get eyes on this thing.
Right.
If none of them have
any interest in the thing.
So it's like, I almost would rather really cater to those people for whom do have interest in the thing. And then you can sort of organically grow it.
We started a Patreon.
Oh, nice.
Last year, I think maybe last summer. And that's
killer.
It's been interesting because, to be honest with you, I can't say the word Patreon on Instagram or Facebook without them literally blocking like my posts from most of my fans
really?
For days.
Interesting.
So I don't really talk about it as much as I like people are would probably be like, why don't you talk about that? And that's the reason. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
If I type out the word Patreon, like, sometimes
it's just not going to get eyeballs
on it. Shadow ban you or something.
Yeah, oh, totally.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, it's
we're
bad.
We're going to start. Brian and I have talked about starting an OnlyFans for this, just to, and like, and like, present it as like, present it in like a really over the top way, but then like, you subscribe and it's just like bonus videos or like,
oh my god, I should do that. I like
that's what we've been talking about doing that forever. God. We finally decided, okay, fine, fuck it, blue Patreon or whatever. But like, no, I still kind of think part of me is like, we should fucking do that. It'd be. That would be hilarious.
That'd be good.
Yeah. Are you going to do like feet photos? Or
that's what we should do. Oh my God.
If people will pay for them, you know, we might have to.
Let's go. My God.
Gotta monetize this thing somehow.
We'll get like a pro, you know how like you can have like a profile picture for it that's like Brian and I shirtless, but then like you go on and it's just like, it's just more content like this.
Got you here.
That might be the move. Yeah, exactly. Damn.
Well, you know, the Patreon is cool though, because like, I feel like what I've learned is like, we have different tiers. Like, we have, I think it's like a $10 tier, a $50 tier, and a $75 tier. Mm-hmm. And we have people that at every tier. And I feel what I've learned is like, people just want to support you. Like, there are people that are on the $75 tier, which I'm like, okay, first of all, I offered a service on the $75 tier. I said, like, I'm thinking about people who are new up and coming songwriters, like new guitar players to some extent, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that tier includes some work on my part, which, you know, is like setting up a meeting with them, a Zoom meeting, and having discussions about songwriting.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I had one person in that tier take me up on that service. Most of that tier is just people being like, I don't want anything from you. I just want to support. Yeah. And
that's awesome.
It's honestly, it's taught me, because I'm like, I mean, kind of to a fault, I'm like, you know, I will work my ass off, and I think that's. I've had to really work against my work being my worth, and that's something that I've really had to like. If there's one thing that I really have to focus on doing, it's like, you know, I have to realize, like, you know, sometimes I have to set that aside. And honestly, the Patreon has taught me that, because, you know, these people, because I'm thinking like, I need to make this worth. You know,
yeah, every penny,
and yeah, even for the $10 tier, I'm like, we need to make sure that we're, you know, but it's like
getting their money's worth.
I overshoot on that because I'm insane, but like, I am, but the, you know, it's really taught me, like, there are people out there that are my fans that are just wanting to be like, no, I support you.
That's amazing.
It's been really cool. And we put out like live EPs, like entire.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it's cool because that to me, like, I haven't made a record yet that I feel fully great about, like, mm-hmm. for different reasons. Mostly, again, because, like I'm saying, my first EP ever, you're hearing my first song. Well, my first song is not mm-hmm. my favorite song. Like, you know, you can imagine. I don't think it's that great. But, you know, and then even the last record is, there are songs on there that I feel, you know, like, okay, that could have been better, or, you know, on my part. And again, that's maybe overthinking things.
But it's also, it's like every record is going to be the first record for that version of you.
Right.
And then there's only the first record for the next version of you.
Yeah.
Like, that's hard. I can definitely sympathize with that, because you can, I do think that it's a mindset that you can get in that transcends music again. If you can learn to just sort of let go, and that may not be the best way to frame it, but if you can learn to let go in that way, I think it does help you with other aspects of life.
I think I'm to the point where, you know, if we're playing the song live and it feels right to me, or if I have kind of the production down in my mind, if it's more of a stripped down song mm-hmm. or something, like, I know in my heart if that's the right presentation. Yeah. You know, like I said, we were playing in Symphony, that song that I played for you earlier, we were playing that live, and I cut it from the set. You know, we were playing a full band, and I cut it from the set because I'm just like, it's not hitting the way that I want it to. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's, a lot of times people were like naming that song as one that they would, oh, I really like that in Symphony song. So I was doing some weird stuff on guitar that I think it was standing out in mm-hmm. certain ways. But it's just like, there are pieces of it we just weren't getting right. And I think, but when you do have songs where you're like, it's just from top to bottom, you could record this live, and I would make a record of that. that's when I know something's like ready. And and that is my new bar, you know. And I on the last record, it was, we assembled it piece by piece. You know, I had a part of a song or a whole song, and then I would, you know, bring that to my producer. And that feels more risky to me, and that feels like it, like these songs that I'm doing now, like they're standing the test of time, and because we're playing them live. But I mean, at the last record that I did, it was pandemic times. So yeah, we're not being able to play those live.
Yeah.
You can't test them.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I mean,
that's true. That is an interesting, I haven't actually really thought about that, but yeah, my last one came out 2020. It's the same kind of thing where it's like, you know, you're,
oh, it's a completely different thing.
Yeah. And then, yeah. And then you put it out there, like, shit, what do I do with this now? Like
we went to play those songs live, and these sounded entirely different. Mm-hmm. And that gave me pause for a minute. Cause I'm like, oh man, is that bad? You know?
Yeah.
And different people have different opinions on that. But, you know, we've really started to settle into some of those Artifact songs live. Like, I love playing Faded Blue. And I didn't really... Faded Blue, like, I wasn't super stoked on it on the record. Mm-hmm. I was like, it wasn't one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I love playing it live. It's super fun. Like, it's one of the highlights of the live set in my
beautiful.
Mind.
That's beautiful. That's awesome.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting how those things change. And it's interesting for me too. Those things come back around sometimes where, you know, I'm always focusing on the present batch of songs and really trying to focus on that. But then a song will come back to you that you haven't played in like 7 years. And you're like, okay, why does the song want to like present itself now?
Right.
And again, I think it sounds stupid. It's just a matter of being open and like, and saying, okay, receiving that and seeing what you can do with it. And it's fun. It's like a little gift when they come back to you. Cause
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause otherwise, yeah. Cause, and you have to be, you, again, this is something I'm not particularly good at and I've had to get better at, is just accepting, okay, well, some of them will come back when they're supposed to and some of them won't. Mm-hmm. And that just is what it is. I mean, they're all your thing, but you just need to sort of let go of it in that way again. And just, if they come back, great. And then you'll find your way of presenting it in that moment. But anyway, it's an interesting thing. I mean, life with music is, it's so multifaceted. I don't know.
Oh, it's taught me a lot. Like music and working in this industry has taught me, like, I don't know. I feel like it's, I mean, you're constantly having to grow or be stunted, you know, I guess.
No, that's a very good way of saying it. Like, in some ways it's just sort of like sink or swim, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it has its pros and cons, you know, but hell yeah. Dude, I'm so happy you did this. The song sounded fantastic. They were fantastic. And I'm glad you got to come on and talk. This is one of the coolest parts of life for us, is just getting to meet cold and people who are obsessed with the same shit that we are.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, this is really like
therapy for Brian and I think more than anything
pretty
else.
Much,
we just come on here like we bitch about our own problems. Yeah. Like, do you feel the same way?
You're not alone.
There you go. Perfect. That's okay. Thank you. That's what I need to hear right now. But no, everyone go check out the music, catch these guys when they're on tour, all that good stuff. But hell yeah. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
That was so much fun. Yeah. It's definitely